Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Omega Leadership Series show. We are live in studio this week again with best-selling author Lori Beth Jones. Welcome, Lori Beth.
Hi, Shelly.
What happened?
I'm thinking about Jerry Seinfeld.
Oh, okay.
That's the topic in this chapter.
I know, it is. So it should be a pretty laughable show, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, we're excited to have you this week, and we're here again to talk about some principles out of your book, Jesus Life Coach, particularly the focus section. And I love how this last chapter in the focus segment is about a rough start. Like you didn't put it as the first chapter. You put it as the last chapter. And it's like, wow, you get all your plans, you get all your strategies, you get all things aligned, you get the website, you get the Twitter, you get the Facebook, you get the people following you, and then boom, you get the rough start chapter. it's kind of like that sometimes. But talk to us a little bit about what you mean here about rough starts. Obviously, Jesus had a few of those, and you talk about that. But what are you communicating here to the reader and with Jesus as your life coach? You'll be off to a rough start.
Well, I think that, the very beginning that each of us had was the birth process. And although some people like to think that we got here by storks, the truth is we all landed here in a big, bloody, screaming mess. And, it cleaned up pretty fast, but the process is painful, messy, and bloody. And beginnings are like that sometimes. Beginnings are like that sometimes. And the notion that everything has to be in order, perfectly in order, and all our ducks in a row, and that we can see the plan all the way down the runway, it just isn't the way it is. It's not the real world, and it's not how great movements are started.
So then why in education and in higher ed and, PhD levels, do we philosophy and, why don't we just get everybody to jump in and do their thing and learn that way, which is kind of the entrepreneurial spirit or spiritual attitude. And some people do that, right? They jump in, they get their hands wet. But for the most part, our culture, like, we want to solve it before we try it. What's that about?
Oh, that's well said. That is very well said. One of the things that irritates me the most about a lot of Christian messaging is that no matter what the pain is, we'll put a scripture around it, and then isn't that special,
Yes.
Isn't that special? When really it can be heartaching. And one of the prophets told Mary, the mother of Jesus, this sword is going to pierce your heart. And, it did. And I'm thinking of the play Divine Rivalry between Michelangelo and Da Vinci. And Da Vinci was criticizing the strength in Mary's arms and the sculpture that Michelangelo had done. He said, a woman can't have arms that look like that. And Michelangelo said she was holding the sorrow of the whole world.
Wow.
Which is kind of a side note here, but it made me think of that, the strength is in the decision. And the decision can't always be perfect, and you can't know the end. Jesus, his mother asked him to do something, and he didn't think he was ready. He didn't even think he was ready.
Right.
It's like, no, not here, not now, not at a wedding, not with all my friends. And I liken that in the chapter to people, friends maybe saying, get out there, get out on stage, get that business license, leave that abusive marriage, whatever, where, we think, oh man, we want the yellow brick road laid out in front of us, but it just doesn't happen. We have to slosh through the mud.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. And mm-hmm. and in the chapter, you and I were chuckling in the pre-show about Jerry Seinfeld, how his heart was to be a comic, and his parents wanted him to get a degree, and he got a degree, but he didn't even go to the graduation party. He went to the comedy club, and it was the first time that he could go out on stage, and he had his notes, and the notes read, delis, girlfriends, parents. And so he got there, and he had his five-minute set, and he was so nervous, all he could read literally were the words, delis, girlfriends, parents. His knees were shaking so bad, he couldn't even remember the jokes. And yet people laughed. His intention was to make people laugh, and somehow that came through. So then he promised he would memorize the script, and the next time he couldn't memorize the script, and people just started laughing. And I share his career arc because he became one of the most successful comedians of all time. But he was fired from 3 different shows. People told him he couldn't act, and yet by the time of his show was on the air, they were begging him $1 million an episode to stay on. So, it's not like he stepped onto the stage and the spotlight fell and everybody just thought he was the cat's meow. You know, the meow has to be inside of you, and then you turn it into a roar.
Wow, that's tweetable. I love that. Yeah. The meow is inside of you, and then you have to turn it into a roar. Mm-hmm. Which is a whole new book you wrote, right?
Yeah. You better write that one down. I don't know where that one came from.
Well, you talk about in Jesus Career Counselor, you talk about how God is calling us to rise, risk, and roar. It just took me there really quick to that space of roaring. You know, we don't roar loud enough, or people aren't taking the roar serious. Like maybe it's still kind of a meow when it really should be a roar. Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
So, I remember starting my company, and maybe I've told this story before on the show, but my teammates at the YWCA were so excited for me. I had finally given my notice, and they bought me an engraved cross pen, and I was supposed to start. The party was on Friday, and I was supposed to start Monday at this big company where the president had given me this contract. And I showed up Monday morning, and the receptionist said, "Who are you?" And I said, "I'm here to see John Smith." And they said, "He doesn't work anymore. He got fired on Friday." I mean, it's like a sitcom, and you're going, "Wait, I just left my job for this job, and now nobody even knows my name." And I remember going to the Chico's Tacos and ordering tacos, and I couldn't even swallow the taco. I mean, I literally could not swallow. I chewed and chewed. I couldn't even. I just thought, oh, what a mistake I have made. I just got left dangling. And that was exactly what it took to get me out of that womb of, loving, safe, nice people into the arena of being my own boss.
Uh-huh.
And so it was definitely a rough beginning, even though I had planned it to be a red carpet. It was rough. And, so I think that we need to understand that sometimes the urges, our body physically is telling us. They say there's such a thing as gut instinct. There's a difference between fear and discernment. And, it's
and what is that? What is that, Lori?
Well, I think that fear is when you're afraid for your own safety. But discernment is when your physical being is telling you something about your destiny.
Hmm.
And I think we underestimate, our gut instinct, our little thoughts, the little kitten meows that are telling us we need to roar, the still small voice that really needs to be a shout. We really need to listen. And I was having a conversation with a friend earlier about, what they teach in self-defense classes, that if you get into a situation and you feel like something's not right, you got to listen to that. You've got to trust that. You can't see the danger, but you can sense the danger. Sure.
And sometimes it's easier, you know, sometimes it's easier to hang on to what you know than to walk into the unknown. And I think often, you know, that's what keeps people from fully experiencing the fulfillment that you write about or that you talk about, and in understanding, you know, their divine calling and their purpose is, you know, it's the unknown that keeps us at bay. It's that lack of roar that keeps us, you know, in a place that we don't really want to be, but we don't know how to change it. You know, and obviously knowing that things are going to be rough is not an incentive to jump either. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
You just got to dive, you know? Just got to dive.
Yeah. Because you can always get out of the water and climb the ladder and dive again. Right?
Right.
Unless it's a swimming pool with no water in it.
Yeah. Like Heidi, my friend that swam the English Channel, or at least part of a relay race in the English Channel, and she said the waves were so high, they were 4 feet high, and sometimes she'd be doing a stroke and her arm would hit air because the wave had lifted her on the crest. You know, it was just just an amazing journey that she took to do that. So this is really about new beginnings. And not thinking that everything is going to come out perfectly and that you're going to smell pretty and look great. I think one of the chapters in another book I have written is he knew it was okay to limp across the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people who win the marathon races, they don't look so good.
Right.
You know, but it's really the fact that they finished. And if it's time to finish a chapter of what you thought was going to happen and then just break through that tape and move to the next one, that's courage. That is courage. You know, I recently, or not too long ago, had to sell and or give up a bunch of properties in Phoenix. And I remember each one of them had a deer was attached to a dream I had for it. You know, I had a dream that a family could live in this one, and then there was a sixplex, and I saw how it could be a little courtyard, and there could be chairs and a place for picnics, and everything had a little dream attached to it, and they're gone. You're just gone. So you just have to let things go and know that nothing is ever really lost in eternity, and it was all a part of some bigger plan.
Sure. Yeah, so I'm sitting here thinking about this this passage here about the miracle, Jesus' first miracle, and what would have happened if the water didn't really change the wine on the first time.
Right. Was it three parts vinegar, one part miracle, or was it?
You know, it just was. You know, it was just classy on God's part to show up and deliver that wine. But, you know, how humbling and how, what other word I can think of at the moment it would have been had it not changed.
Right.
You know, and we're talking about a God incident and a God act here, so I'm not trying to be funny about it. But I think sometimes we're afraid that, you know, our first miracle isn't going to happen. And, you know, that Jesus had a lot more practice at changing water to wine than we do. However, you know, I think that the tools that we have often don't get used in the miracle process because we're waiting for the miracle to happen. And I think this chapter is an incentive and an encouragement to us all to look at, you know, a rough start as, you know, one dive, like you just said.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you so much. We've got like 15 seconds. Lori, send us off this week.
Well, Jesus said, wait, it's not my time. And yet his mother knew it was his time. And God knew it was his time. And the circumstances in front of him said, now's the time.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much again for being here this week, and we appreciate your writings and your insights and your wisdom that you bring to us every week, and thank you for penning these words. Appreciate it.
All right. Blessings to you, Shelley.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.